uses HIV prevention work using some unusual methods, which you can hear more of in Cross Incontinence at 8:30. Before that, the final episode of Death to America, Anti-Americanism Examined. Justin Webb travels to Egypt.
June 2005, the US Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice flies to Cairo and at the American University makes a speech that will go down in history.
For 60 years, my country, the United States, pursued stability at the expense of democracy in this region, here in the Middle East. And we achieved neither. Now, we are taking a different course. We are supporting the democratic aspirations of all people.
I believe the Bush administration genuinely wanted that speech to be a turning point, a new start. To many in the Middle East, though, it came woefully late. Fully 50 years ago, President Eisenhower appeared to be close to making a similar compact with the peoples of the Middle East when, disregarding the squeals from London and Paris, he sided against the old colonial powers during the Suez Crisis, sided against Israel as well. It looked to some in the region as if America really did promise to be a friend of moderate Arab nationalism. But the Cold War intervened and the Six-Day War between Israel and her Arab neighbors, and the rest, as they say, is history. America ended up siding with Israel and a handful of despotic Arab rulers. In 2005, the message from Condoleezza Rice was that those rulers were out of luck. One man took the new message to heart. Ayman Nour, a prominent liberal secular politician, ran for the presidency against Hosni Mubarak. Nour was runner-up with 7% of the vote, according to government figures. For his impertinence, he was slung into prison on election fraud charges that virtually no one believes to be valid. The US has complained, but it has not acted to help him. The promise of America has not been delivered.
أيمن نور ألها يا شباب
أيمن نور ألها يا شباب
يا ناجي سلم أهاب
يا ناجي سلم أهاب
أيمن نور ألها يا شباب
If American support for democracy means anything, it really ought to mean something here. We're in a smoke-filled, incredibly ornate room in the center of Cairo, and it's absolutely packed with people who've come to an opposition meeting, but we've been told that This meeting has been penetrated by the security forces, and indeed, people have had difficulty getting up the stairs to get here. They're being told that they should think twice about taking part. And just as I speak to you, a group of them is coming towards us.
Your supporters?
There is a problem here.
What is the problem?
He means that it's not a good time to do this now.
Why is not a good time?
Because you have lots of problems here.
Because you have people who are watching you here.
Yeah, we have to go now. Because you have a problem here.
What is the problem?
No, I can't tell you.
Looking very nervous, the young men go. I am ushered into a side room to meet someone who will talk. The wife of that jailed would-be President Ayman Nour. Talking to us may get her jailed too, but it's a risk she is prepared to take.
I'm Gamila Ismail. I'm a human rights activist. I'm a vice president of El Ghad opposition party, the most recently established opposition party, probably the most popular one, and the one that was born and then put under siege for the last 3 years.
Why is your husband in prison?
My husband is in prison because he was a young, very dynamic, liberal, democrat, opposition Egyptian. He had all sort of hopes and confidence that what the Egyptian regime is currently calling for and what the American governments are calling for, he had confidence that what they were calling for in terms of reform and democracy is true.
And what happened?
Well, he's in prison now. He's been in prison for the last year and a half. He feels that he's been trapped. He feels that what he thought was true and was genuine all of these calls for democracy and the will for reform and for change in the Middle East was true, he realized later on that he was a victim.
What about the impact of all of this on you, on your life?
I have been threatened with all sort of threats that can face a woman in the Middle East, in an Islamic culture. I have been receiving threats through the mail, on the phone. I have been facing charges of beating up officers, charges of insulting God, charges of insulting the higher entity, which is President Mubarak, and so on. So a day is like, you know, a small war.
In the end, do you believe that America and the promise of America will come good? Or do you believe that they have really betrayed you and let you down in a final sense?
I don't want to jump to conclusions. I still have hope. Because it's a very important factor in this game in the Middle East. The game for democracy. And I mean, I'm talking about it now as a game because it is a game. I mean, the Egyptian regime and the American administration, they know what kind of game they're playing under the table.
The kind of Egyptians who you meet and talk to and know and campaign with, what is the view of America, not of the Bush administration, but of what America means, as it were?
America is a dream. It's a destination to everyone who wants to go and live in a free and democratic place. Until this minute, this is how Egyptians regard it. As for the Bush administration and the administrations before, the fact that they always stand behind the Egyptian regime and support it from falling is something which Egyptians hate. And Egyptians are encouraged always by the Egyptian regime in indirect ways to hate Americans. They hide what they get from aid. They never say that health programs and food programs and education programs are done by the Americans. They do it as if it's their own implementations to get more credit from the people. They just blow the fire of the hatred of Egyptians to the Americans. They allow the demonstrations to march in the streets in huge numbers. They allow this to happen because it's anti-American. If we try to do any demonstrations that anti-Mubarak, that's calling for a more liberal situation, we are beaten up, we are detained, we are thrown in prison. My husband is luckier than tens of thousands of Egyptian detainees in the prison. At least people know that he's in prison. We have tens of thousands of Egyptian detainees in prison who are just forgotten. I want to tell you that the Egyptian regime is the biggest enemy of the American administration and the American people. They have resulted in this hatred that's very widely spread and is being spread every day in the Egyptian street on simple Egyptians in my husband's district and during the presidential elections, the very first elections in Egyptian history. The American flag was burned in the middle of the square by the ruling party of President Mubarak.
This is a fascinating accusation, an accusation that anti-Americanism is being used, indeed being fomented, by the Mubarak government. Egypt gets a lot of aid money. In the Middle East, only Israel gets more. But it's a fact that most Egyptians are not told about it. Instead, the Mubarak government keeps the two sides apart, telling its own people nothing good about the United States and telling the United States nothing good about the Egyptian electorate, specifically telling Washington that the nation is a hotbed of anti-Americanism. Here in Egypt, the threat of street-level anti-Americanism is, to an important extent, a fake threat. Hala Mustafa is a member of the ruling party, but a maverick. She was willing to confirm to us that a nation she respects is being taken for a terrible ride.
I think America is a force of good for freedom, for liberation, for human rights principles. Of course, most of the regimes in the region could be annoyed and feel uncomfortable because of the Americans' commitment to democracy and to support freedoms in the Middle East. And that's why most of them could resort to anti-Americanism as a tool to fight against this strategy of promoting democracy and freedom in the region.
What, in your view, is the Egyptian government then telling Washington about the state of mind of people in this country towards America?
that everyone hates you except us. So you have to take us as we are and don't push hard for change or reform or openness. And that's why it is in the interest of the regime or government to steer the people and to mobilize them against the United States.
In Washington, the disappointment is shared. It is one of the reasons the neoconservatives have been distancing themselves from President Bush. Richard Pearl, the Reagan-era Pentagon official who's been a backer of the Democracy Project, says Hala Mustafa is right.
It's a very real problem, and I think it's a fair description of what the Mubarak regime has been doing, and we have fallen for it. We've fallen for it in part because the people who evaluate those situations for us, the people we pay to know about and think about parts of the world that are not really familiar to Americans, and I'm thinking here of the Foreign Service and the Central Intelligence Agency, fall for this every time. So Mubarak is harsh with liberal critics of his regime, and then he turns around to us and says, if the critics of my regime are allowed to succeed, you will have the Muslim Brotherhood, which we have every reason to not want to see succeed the Mubarak arrangements, not least of all because there's nothing democratic about the outlook or values of the Muslim Brotherhood.
But is it a real possibility that Mubarak, in this struggle with this administration and future administrations, that Mubarak actually and people like him will win the day?
I'm afraid Mubarak is winning the day. And the Bush administration is not pressing, as I hoped it once would, for reform in Egypt or Saudi Arabia or other places in the Gulf where a small number of people rule a large number of people, with the result of widespread disaffection, which ultimately is, to use that dreadful term, one of the root causes of terrorism.
So, Middle Eastern anti-Americanism is, in part at least, a creation of local leaders. And, tragically, the U.S. is falling into the trap of pulling back from full support for democracy out of fear of this shibboleth. The elections that brought the Islamic party Hamas to power in the Palestinian territories played into the hands of Hosni Mubarak. And on the streets of Cairo, it allows him to do what he wants to keep the opposition at bay. I attended a planned pro-democracy rally and witnessed this repression at first hand.
It's supposed to be here at 5 in the Tahrir Liberation Square, but security has closed off everywhere where it's possible for people to be demonstrating, and they're also surrounding all of the political parties. All of the activists can't move freely in downtown area.
A lot of interior ministry police, sort of secret service agents, all of them in plain clothes, sunglasses, guns tucked into their back belts.
What's he done? I think they're going to be
there. And they've pounced on our interviewee. He's surrounded and he's being taken away. He's done absolutely nothing violent. He's going quietly, though, because he knows that he risks being severely beaten if he gives the slightest excuse to these people.
We did our best, of course, to get him released, and he was let out after 3 days in a police cell. So who are the Middle East anti-Americans? They do exist, of course, and some of them, particularly those motivated by religion, are potential mass murderers. Most Americans would put them at the top of the list of threats to their nation and to them as individuals. Yet in many ways, it's the others, those who've not said goodbye to reason and humanity, who pose the bigger long-term threat. The bombers, after all, are a tiny minority, and they can be arrested or suppressed or killed. These men and women, the peaceful haters, you could call them, deny American legitimacy and deny, too, the fundamental decency of the American ideal. And they carry those thoughts on into future generations. They do so with a vehemence that takes the breath away. In an office with walls covered in posters of Bob Dylan and Charlie Chaplin, I met a drama professor, Mahmoud Al-Losi.
We've had almost 6,000 years without the Americans in Egypt. I thought we did pretty well. I don't think the world needs America, but I think America has played a very destructive and devastating role. Americans feel that they are somehow the guardians of the world and of humanity. For some reason, you know, I mean, other nations had empires, but they never expected it to be loved. But Americans, for some reason, feel that they should be loved. And if you don't love them, then they're going to kill more of you until you love them. They're going to beat you to a pulp until you love them. To me, this is sort of the only type of American exceptionalism I can think of. This need and desire for being loved, just because they're American.
But Americans might say, well, hang on a minute, what we've done to bring freedom to places where there isn't any, and to defend ourselves against attacks on our democracy.
There are so many myths, you know, and lies and fabrications, and you repeat them long enough and people believe them. I mean, America, land of the free, home of the brave. I don't know how many million African slaves brought to America, Native Americans slaughtered, you know, probably the most successful genocide in history. In its 200 years, America has waged probably as many wars as most of humanity in a period of 2,000 years, and all in the name of freedom. Even Hitler didn't do that. I mean, and Hitler also wanted a universal peace, you know. I don't think they've done anything. I think, on the contrary, wherever they've gone, they've brought devastation, poverty, they've destroyed the environment, destroyed ways of life, patterns of life. I don't think America is bringing anything in that sense.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
I'm outside an imposing building in downtown Cairo. It's getting a fresh coat of paint, but no amount of cosmetic alterations will hide the fact that this is the unofficial headquarters of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic party, which is banned but semi-tolerated here. We've come to meet one of its representatives.
My name is Isam El-Aryan. I'm a physician, clinical pathologist, and I was graduated in Egypt here in medicine and studied also law, Sharia and history and Quran. I am Muslim brother. I was tried in front of a military court in Egypt, sent me to prison for 5 years.
Dr. El-Aryan is just out of prison and will almost certainly be back in jail soon. That thought, though, does not seem to bother him, and nor does America. He's amused by what he sees as the desire of Americans to be loved.
America is not the center of the globe. I can live and die without hearing anything about America. If they are searching for respect, okay. But why love?
They want to be loved, though, don't they?
It's their matter. I never mind about love America or not. They inherited the British Empire. But before colonialism by British and French and others, they studied the culture of these colonies.
Now, and the American people, they have resulted in this hatred that's very widely spread and is being spread every day in the Egyptian street on simple Egyptians. In my husband's district and during the presidential elections, the very first elections in Egyptian history, the American flag was burned in the middle of the square by the ruling party of President Mubarak.
This is a fascinating accusation, an accusation that anti-Americanism is being used, indeed being fomented, by the Mubarak government. Egypt gets a lot of aid money. In the Middle East, only Israel gets more. But it's a fact that most Egyptians are not told about it. Instead, the Mubarak government keeps the two sides apart, telling its own people nothing good about the United States and telling the United States nothing good about the Egyptian electorate, specifically telling Washington that the nation is a hotbed of anti-Americanism. Here in Egypt, the threat of street-level anti-Americanism is, to an important extent, a fake threat. Hala Mustafa is a member of the ruling party, but a maverick. She was willing to confirm to us that a nation she respects is being taken for a terrible ride.
I think America is a force of good for freedom, for liberation, for human rights principles. Of course, most of the regimes in the region could be annoyed and feel uncomfortable because of the Americans' commitment to democracy and to support freedoms in the Middle East. And that's why most of them could resort to anti-Americanism as a tool to fight against this strategy of promoting democracy and freedom in the region.
What, in your view, is the Egyptian government then telling Washington about the state of mind of people in this country towards America?
That everyone hates you except us, so you have to take us as we are and don't push hard for change or reform or openness. And that's why it is in the interest of the regime or government to steer the people and to mobilize them against the United States.
In Washington, the disappointment is shared. It is one of the reasons the neoconservatives have been distancing themselves from President Bush. Richard Pearl, the Reagan-era Pentagon official who's been a backer of the Democracy Project, says Hala Mustafa is right.
It's a very real problem, and I think it's a fair description of what the Mubarak regime has been doing, and we have fallen for it. We've fallen for it in part because the people who evaluate those situations for us, the people we pay to know about and think about parts of the world that are not really familiar to Americans, and I'm thinking here of the Foreign Service and the Central Intelligence Agency, fall for this every time. So Mubarak is harsh with liberal critics of his regime, and then he turns around to us and says, if the critics of my regime are allowed to succeed, you will have the Muslim Brotherhood, which we have every reason to not want to see succeed the Mubarak arrangements, not least of all because there's nothing democratic about the outlook or values of the Muslim Brotherhood.
But is it a real possibility that Mubarak, in this struggle with this administration and future administrations, that Mubarak actually and people like him will win the day?
I'm afraid Mubarak is winning the day. And the Bush administration is not pressing, as I hoped it once would, for reform in Egypt or Saudi Arabia or other places in the Gulf where a small number of people rule a large number of people, with the result of widespread disaffection, which ultimately is, to use that dreadful term, one of the root causes of terrorism.
So Middle Eastern anti-Americanism is, in part at least, a creation of local leaders. And tragically, the US is falling into the trap of pulling back from full support for democracy out of fear of this shibboleth. The elections that brought the Islamic party Hamas to power in the Palestinian territories played into the hands of Hosni Mubarak. And on the streets of Cairo, it allows him to do what he wants to keep the opposition at bay. I attended a planned pro-democracy rally and witnessed this repression at first hand.
It's supposed to be here at 5 in the Tahrir Liberation Square, but security has closed off everywhere where it's possible for people to be demonstrating, and they're also surrounding all of the political parties. All of the activists can't move freely in downtown area.
A lot of interior ministry police, sort of secret service agents, all of them in plain clothes, sunglasses, guns tucked into their back belts.
What's he done?
Why?
What's he done?
I think they're going
to
be.
And they've pounced on our interviewee. He's surrounded and he's being taken away. He's done absolutely nothing violent. He's going quietly though because he knows that he risks being severely beaten if he gives the slightest excuse to these people.
We did our best, of course, to get him released, and he was let out after 3 days in a police cell. So who are the Middle East anti-Americans? They do exist, of course, and some of them, particularly those motivated by religion, are potential mass murderers. Most Americans would put them at the top of the list of threats to their nation and to them as individuals. Yet in many ways, it's the others, those who've not said goodbye to reason and humanity, who pose the bigger long-term threat. The bombers, after all, are a tiny minority, and they can be arrested or suppressed or killed. These men and women, the peaceful haters, you could call them, deny American legitimacy and deny, too, the fundamental decency of the American ideal, and they carry those thoughts on into future generations. They do so with a vehemence that takes the breath away. In an office with walls covered in posters of Bob Dylan and Charlie Chaplin, I met a drama professor, Mahmoud Al-Losi.
We've had almost 6,000 years without the Americans in Egypt. I thought we did pretty well. I don't think the world needs America, but I think America has played a very destructive and devastating role. Americans feel that they are somehow the guardians of the world and of humanity. For some reason, you know, I mean, other nations had empires, but they never expected it to be loved. But Americans, for some reason, feel that they should be loved. And if you don't love them, then they're going to kill more of you until you love them. They're going to beat you to a pulp until you love them. To me, this is sort of the only type of American exceptionalism I can think of. This need and desire for being loved, just because they're American.
But Americans might say, well, hang on a minute, what we've done to bring freedom to places where there isn't any, and to defend ourselves against attacks on our democracy.
There are so many myths, you know, and lies and fabrications, and you repeat them long enough and people believe them. I mean, America, land of the free, home of the brave. I don't know how many million African slaves brought to America, Native Americans slaughtered, you know, probably the most successful genocide in history. In its 200 years, America has waged probably as many wars as most of humanity in a period of 2,000 years, and all in the name of freedom. Even Hitler didn't do that. I mean, and Hitler also wanted a universal peace, you know. I don't think they've done anything. I think, on the contrary, wherever they've gone, they've brought devastation, poverty, they've destroyed the environment, destroyed ways of life, patterns of life. I don't think America is bringing anything in that sense.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
I'm outside an imposing building in downtown Cairo. It's getting a fresh coat of paint, but no amount of cosmetic alterations will hide the fact that this is the unofficial headquarters of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic party, which is banned but semi-tolerated here. We've come to meet one of its representatives.
My name is Isam El-Arian. I am a physician, clinical pathologist, and I was graduated in Egypt here in medicine and studied also law, sharia and history and Quran. I am Muslim brother. I was tried in front of a military court in Egypt, sent me to prison for 5 years.
Dr. El-Arian is just out of prison and will almost certainly be back in jail soon. That thought, though, does not seem to bother him, and nor does America. He's amused by what he sees as the desire of Americans to be loved.
America is not the center of the globe. I can live and die without hearing anything about America. If they are searching for respect, okay. But why love?
They want to be loved, though, don't they?
It doesn't matter. I never mind about love America or not. They inherited the British Empire. But before colonialism by British and French and others, they studied the culture of these colonies.